From hearts to faces, from kidneys to livers, transplant medicine is progressing in leaps and bounds. If it were possible, would you be willing to have a brain transplant? Not really. It would be more like donating your body to someone else's brain, wouldn't it? Because your brain is really who you are. And we need to look after it. Have you ever thought that you might be poisoning your brain every day without even realizing it? Stay tuned. Go Healthy for Good starts right now. Hello, I'm Dr. Nerida. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. Thanks for joining us for this special series on the brain and its function. Let's get started with an interview of the world-renowned Dr. Ben Carson, who has held many people's brains right in his hands.
You know, the human brain, if you have an average brain, you're capable of almost anything because of the complexity of our brains. Billions and billions of neurons, hundreds of billions of interconnections. It can process more than 2 million bits of information in 1 second. It never forgets anything you've ever seen, anything you've ever heard. And, you know, with something like that sitting up here, why would you ever utter the words, I can't?
I can't. Two words that hold us back and keep us from following our dreams. Many years ago, the words, I can't, might have defined Ben Carson. Not that you would ever know that from where he is today. Ben is the world's foremost pediatric neurosurgeon, based at Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore. In 1987, he became the first person to successfully separate Siamese twins joined at the brain. He's also the subject of a Hollywood film, a philanthropist, and was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Amazing achievements. Made all the more impressive when set against his troubled childhood.
Well, you know, growing up for myself in inner city Detroit in very desperate situations, then we lived in a tenement, large multi-family dwellings, boarded up windows and doors, sirens and gangs, rats and roaches. It was a miserable environment. I was a pretty awful student and didn't have a lot of belief in myself. Academically, and neither did my classmates. They all thought I was stupid. They called me dummy. I was the butt of all the jokes. But despite the fact that no one else believed in me, my mother did. You know, we were very poor. There was never money for anything. But it didn't cost anything to get a book from the library. And between the covers of those books, I could go anywhere in the world. I could be anybody. I could do anything. It was like an escape from my world of poverty and violence to places that you could only imagine.
Riding away on the wings of imagination. In 1991, Dr. Arlene Taylor was voted International Woman of the Year by International Biographical Centre of Cambridge in England. She's an engaging speaker, researcher, and author on brain function, and she joins us again today.
Dr. Taylor, some people seem very gifted. What's giftedness?
Well, your guess is as good as mine. Every brain is gifted. There isn't a computer on the planet that can do everything that the human brain can do.
That's true.
It can do some things, some functions, actually faster, but it cannot do all the functions of the human brain, so every brain is gifted. Having said that, it appears that some people are born with an energy advantage, if you will, for specific functions that would allow them, if they want to hone those functions, study. I mean, you're born with a potential, but you're rarely born with it as a done deal. With a caveat such as Mozart, for example. Mozart's mother was a concert pianist, and she played 8 hours a day, reportedly, the whole time she was pregnant with him. So there's some belief that yes, he had innate giftedness for musical composition.
Right.
And that probably is familial. Some gifts run in families. Whether that's genetic or epigenetics or a combination of both, nobody's sure. Mm-hmm. Probably a combination of both. But some believe that he was born with harmony already developed in his brain. So from listening to her with all this gorgeous music, hour yes. after hour after month after month, and so by age 6 or 7, he is hearing entire symphonies in his brain and can hardly get them written down fast enough.
My.
So there are brains that are born with talents, if you want to call them that, giftednesses. Mm-hmm. But they're born with a potential, and we have to hone that. And part of, I think, becoming the person you were designed to be is identifying what is my brain gifted at, and then you spend your time honing that. Yes, we do want to learn other skills. That's what education's all about, mm-hmm. building skills in those 4 cerebral chunks. But you want to spend your time honing your giftedness. Figure it takes 10,000 hours of focused, directed practice and learning to really become world-class in your giftedness. Not everybody figures out what it is, first of all. Not everybody has the opportunity to learn and hone it. Mm-hmm. Not everybody wants to. Not everybody's family honors that person's giftedness. Mm. They'll try to push them into, well, all the males in our family become accountants, or all the women in our family become teachers. Or all
the families owned this farm for 3 centuries, and therefore everybody will become farmers.
And take over the family business.
Right.
And so many times people don't find their giftedness. Now, in a scriptural, spiritual sense, to me, that's what the parable of the talents is all about. When you don't figure out your talent or you aren't allowed to use it, it's like you bury it.
Okay, so in the talent story, there was... The master was leaving and he left 5 talents with 1 person, 2 with another, and 1 with the third. Now, they managed to double their talents. So this guy ended up with 10, this one with 4, and this one buried it. So you're saying the one that buried it was...
Probably not figuring out what his brain was good at and honing it. And I know it talks about, you know, 2, 1, 2, 5 talents. Some brains are multi-talented, but we often think of people like Herbert Blumstead, for example, who was director of the San Francisco Symphony for a long time. Mm. His talent is clearly music and directing, and so you could probably break that up into a variety of sub-talents. Mm. But there are other people who are gifted at sports. Look at the Olympics.
Yes.
Other people gifted at research. Other people gifted at exploration, people gifted at architectural drawings, people gifted at experiments that study the brain, for example, people gifted at creating the brain imaging equipment that have allowed us to study the brain. So there's, we need them all.
Mm-hmm. Now, another aspect of that parable, if we can just stay with that for a minute, is... There's a sense of personal responsibility in that. So when we find an area of giftedness in ourselves, we are somewhat personally responsible, are we not, to develop that?
Well, that's my brain's opinion. You know, I like to look at it with this metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
I have been leased a brain and a body for use on this planet. I could go down and lease a BMW, I could go down and lease a Jaguar, I could go down and lease, well, I couldn't really, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Different cars have different abilities. Some are more comfortable riding, some are faster, some use part gas, part electricity. All right, that's very much like a human being. So what kind of brain and body was leased to me? So I'm responsible for figuring that out, and we know enough about the brain, there are ways to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, I've been given a manual. You know, if you look at the Bible as a manual for everyday living, and then the research, again, as additional guidance, mm-hmm. I have been given some information on how to take care of this brain and this body. And I believe it's my responsibility to take as good a care of it as I would of a leased vehicle, mm-hmm. because eventually yeah. I'll be turning it in.
Right.
And some people don't take very good care of their leased brain and body.
Now, we leave the body behind eventually. The brain? What happens to our brain?
I don't know what's going to happen to our brain, but I believe we're going to get a brand new one.
Mm-hmm. Is it going to function in a similar way? Of course, it will be so much more powerful, but...
I would think so.
The personal responsibility that we've taken to take good care of our brains, we may have to... Not have to, but we may enjoy mm-hmm. the development that we have taken part in this life.
There are some brains called savant brains. They are just off the charts, gifted in one particular area. Mm-hmm. That's what I think we're going to get. We're going to get a savant brain that's gifted in every area.
Sounds wonderful.
So begin preparing for a fully gifted brain and a body that can fly into space unaided. Heaven is going to be amazing. Well, we still have lots to cover with Dr. Taylor and more from Dr. Carson. Coming up next, a healthy snack, some exercise, the news, and much more. But first, a short break. Stay tuned.
When I lived in Japan, I had a friend who was an artist. She painted beautiful, intricate designs on silk fabric that were used to make kimonos. She invited me to her studio, and when I walked in, I saw this long table in the middle of this room. And on this table was about 10 to 12 yards of silk fabric. The work that she would do was so detailed, so intricate, but yet so amazingly beautiful. She would take her time, and sometimes it would take her 6 months to finish a 10-yard panel. I visited her one day, but she was doing something very interesting. With a magnifying glass in hand, she was going over every single inch of that fabric, checking her work to make sure that everything was good. It took her a long time because she did it slowly and carefully. And then she put down the magnifying glass, and with a smile of satisfaction on her face, she said, "It is good." The Bible tells us that God created this world and all living things in 6 days, and he rested after he was finished because all was good.
As for me, I call to God and the Lord saves me. Evening, morning, and noon I cry out in distress. And he hears my voice.
Welcome back. We are with Justin with one of his favorite recipes, right?
One of my favorite things to make.
What are we making?
This is hummus, but with a twist.
Okay.
Hummus with a twist. Hummus, olive hummus.
Olive hummus.
So hummus with lots of delicious olives.
What's your favorite olive?
There's a lot of types of olives, but I probably use black olives the most, but I love green olives. You just can't get them quite as easily. You can also use a Kalamata olive, which has a real zing to it.
That's my favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love those.
Yeah. And the green olives, though, are the unripe version of black olives, right? Unless they're colored up and they're painted with iron.
Right.
And then you don't know.
But
a true ripe olive is green with little black spots. So, and you can get some of those, and they do taste great.
Delicious.
They are very good.
Delicious.
So what do you put in this?
Well, here's the recipe. This is Justin's special recipe. This is how I make it at home. One can of chickpeas and keep half the liquid inside. 2 cloves of garlic, 2 tablespoons of olive oil, 2 tablespoons of tahini, the juice from 1 lime, olives to taste, and salt to taste.
Mm.
It's really simple.
All right.
So let's get started.
Now, is that half the liquid or is that more?
That looks like a whole can's worth of liquid.
All right. So we might need a spoon.
Yeah.
There you go.
Now, the chickpea is a bit of a wonder food, isn't that right?
Yeah, it is. You could say it's a superfood, actually.
Yeah?
It's got lots of good protein, carbohydrate.
Mm.
Plenty of amino acids in there.
Mm.
And what I love about hummus is it's got the carbohydrates and the protein there, and then you add some...
Tahini,
and that's the nice friendly fat, the monounsaturated.
Yeah, because it's sesame, roasted sesame butter.
Right.
Sesame seeds.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's our.
So half of that liquid.
Half of that liquid, be just the right. This is the bachelor version, so this is assuming you only have cans. You haven't.
Right,
and
you haven't cooked it yourself. Right. And if you do cook it yourself, a can is the equivalent of 1.5 cups.
Yeah,
I'll pop that in while you're.
All right. So this is probably my favorite part: the garlic. And I'm saying use 2 cloves, but I'll sometimes use 4. Or if I have a cold, I'll use like 6 or 8. I've cured myself from colds pretty fast by
eating hummus.
By eating some really 5-alarm hummus.
Right. And, that's the thing, the raw garlic is going to be more effective
raw
than doing it with roasted garlic. Or
Right.
Those more tame versions.
Exactly.
Of garlic.
A little bit of olive oil.
So this is a nice way to get garlic raw down your throat.
That's right. A little bit of olive oil and tahini. Tahini is great. Tahini is great. If it's bitter, don't use it. It's not supposed to be bitter.
Yeah.
Tahini, when it's fresh and delicious, is a wonderful, wonderful thing. And if you don't have it, I have substituted peanut butter for it.
Have you really?
Before. I have. Yeah. And it actually works. It actually works. Juice from 1 lime. I like a lot of lime juice. So I just squeeze it right in there. Love lime juice. I'm just going to do half.
All right.
And then as many olives as you want. So I'm going to put a lot of olives in.
So almost as many as...
Yeah.
Well, maybe
this is
half as much.
Olive
half
hummus.
As much as your chickpeas. So maybe 3/4 cup
if
someone was measuring.
Sure.
But yeah, you do it to taste.
Sure. Yeah? And I like olives. So.
Great. So do I.
Here we go. Okay, now blend to taste also. That's the cool thing about hummus is it's all to taste. There's a basic idea and the rest of it you just play around with it.
So you can make it chunky.
Exactly. Blend it for another few minutes and it'll be silky smooth. Blend it for just a few seconds. It'll be more, have a little
chunky
more texture.
Yeah. Well, should we have it on a baked potato?
Let's do it. This is one of my favorite things to do is... You know, you don't need sour cream.
No.
You don't need...
All that saturated fat.
Yeah, you don't need butter. Just a nice dollop of hummus.
All right. Well, I'm going to just taste the hummus.
Okay.
I know what a potato tastes like. So this, I love baked potato with hummus on.
Yeah, me too.
Let's try this.
Ding. Isn't that great?
That tastes so different from the last time we did hummus.
Yeah. Mm. Olive hummus.
Olive hummus. Very good.
What could you do with an extra 5 years? Earn a degree, visit the 7 modern wonders of the world, or kiss your great-grandchild's cheek? You can do a lot in 5 years. 5 years is the difference that researchers found in the life expectancy between vegetarian and non-vegetarian Adventists. The Adventist Health Study found that vegetarians lived 5 years longer than their non-vegetarian counterparts. Adopting a vegetarian diet could add 5 years to your life and is another ageless advantage.
almost as a side effect of the reading, I was looking at words all the time. So I learned how to spell. And I had to take those words and put them into sentences. So I learned grammar and syntax. I learned how to express myself. And you have to take those sentences, you have to make them into images. So you learn to use your imagination. All of those things are extremely important.
Hello, my name is Layla, and my mommy has epilepsy. Maybe your mommy, daddy, or someone else in your family has epilepsy. I hope this book will let you know what to do if they have a seizure. My mommy wears a special necklace to tell me...
Half a world away from Baltimore, in the city of Bristol, UK, lives a remarkable young lady called Layla. An avid reader with a limitless sense of wonder for the world around her. Layla turned her passion for knowledge into a profession when at the age of 7, she became a published author.
There wasn't a book about adults with epilepsy for children, and I thought it would be nice if it was written by a child as well. Because if you didn't have this book, you would think, oh, what should I do?
Layla's mum, Sarah, developed epilepsy following a head injury when she was a child. Alongside being mum to Layla and her baby sister, Sarah also works as a carer for adults with learning difficulties. Even with her medication, Sarah still has unpredictable seizures. And it was trying to find something to explain why they happen that led to Layla's amazing achievement.
I looked everywhere for a book about epilepsy aimed at a child who's got a family member with epilepsy, but there was just nothing out there. I noticed Layla was carrying around a notepad and I was curious what she was writing in there, and had a little look, and she'd written loads of information about epilepsy. And I thought, this is a really good idea. So I looked into having it published.
Local publisher Pomegranate Books thought so too, and put Layla's book to print. So far, it's sold over 300 copies around the world and has set Layla on course for her future career.
I want to be a writer. I'd like to write adventure books, story books, information books.
I am very proud of her. It's lovely seeing how vivid imagination she's got. It just takes me back to when I was a child. She's eager to be a teacher, and she's also wanting to write more books. For example, that she was asking my father-in-law about his diabetes recently. So I know she wants to write a book to help children who's got a family member with diabetes. I just think it's amazing that she just wants to help so many people. It makes me feel really proud.
She's discovering her brain's giftedness. Now let's go back to Dr. Taylor for some practical advice on brain care.
Dr. Taylor, we've just been talking about the personal responsibility we have for care, to care for our bodies and our brains. Does our lifestyle impact the health of our brains?
There's wonderful research out about how to take care of the brain and body. You know, if you go back to the leased vehicle metaphor, mm-hmm. we're supposed to take care of that vehicle till we turn it back in. And you wouldn't think of standing there and allowing somebody to run their key back and forth across the finish of your car and scratch it all up.
No, absolutely.
But many times we allow people to abuse us verbally, mentally, sexually, spiritually, physically, and I think we're responsible for protecting this vehicle to the best of our ability. When I was in Greece, mm-hmm. I loved going up to the Acropolis and, you know, seeing the ruins.
Yes.
And then years later, I went to Nashville where they have built a replica of the Parthenon.
Oh, really?
And it so caught me just by amazed surprise. That replica of the Parthenon is just amazingly beautiful. And you walk into it and you just can't take it all in.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think back to what's left of the Parthenon after it was abused.
Right.
And it's just a shell of its former self.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think human beings need to learn how to take care of this brain and body. And we have good research on how you take care of it so that eventually we're all going to die. Eventually we're all going to get older. There will be things we can't do as well. But the research is that over half of everything that impacts your rate of aging is within your complete, if not partial, control.
So what about the food that we take in, the sleep that we get, exercise we take? Are those all important as well?
You could just go down the list. The brain functions best when it's in balance, and what's good for the brain is also good for the immune system. So every brain has an amount of sleep that works well for it. Figure it out and get it. Mm-hmm. I need 9 hours every single night. And sometimes earlier in my life, I'd try to cut that thinking, well, if I just sleep 8 hours, I get an extra hour to work. Mm. Well, that's a dead-end street for my brain, because if I get my 9 hours, I can accomplish more in the amount of time that I'm awake than if I cut it even by 1 hour. And then there's the problem of fluid, drinking enough pure water.
Right.
You know, if you average everything, the body's probably nearly three-quarters fluid.
Water, yes.
That's a solution.
Yes.
And the brain is up to 85-86% water in some people. So what are you drinking? People are often drinking fruit juice and sodas and colas and things like that, and it actually takes water for the body to metabolize those sugary drinks, and so you're getting dehydrated. And dehydration is a huge cause of increased free radical production in the brain, which can actually kill brain cells.
Are there any PET scans that, or have PET scans been done looking at the impact of nutrition or fluid intake?
I don't know of any PET scans that have been done, because the PET scans measure the amount of energy, the amount of glucose that's metabolized to do this particular task. There have been some studies that show that a 1% decrease in hydration, so you're slightly dehydrated, translates to a 5% decrease in cognitive ability.
Wow.
You can't think as quickly, your memory isn't as good, and so on and so forth. So there have been some studies with that.
Right, so that would tell us even just that small decrement in fluid intake, 5% difference. If we're not giving it the right energy, the right nutrients, there must be an impact also.
Well, I think it's probably huge.
Mm.
You know, the current research is that you probably will take care of your brain and immune system best if you lean toward Mediterranean cuisine.
Mm-hmm. Which is whole grains, legumes, some olive oil, nuts.
Roots, vegetables, fruits, absolutely.
Yeah.
And sugar is an absolute toxin for the brain. It's toxic.
We're going to come right back to that. I want to talk more. Better keep up your water intake. When we come back from the break, be ready for Sean to train your muscles.
Death is the only inescapable, unavoidable, sure thing. We are sentenced to die the day we're born.
Death is a debt we all must pay.
Some people are so afraid to die that they never begin to live.
Every man must do two things alone. He must do his own believing and his own dying.
Death is not a period, but a comma in the story of life.
He will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away.
Whatever you do, do it all in the name of the Lord.
Welcome back. Sean, what have you got for us? I like these chairs. This looks like we're going to have a really cruisy exercise session today.
Absolutely. We could just actually sit and lounge.
We could talk about exercise.
We could talk about exercise, but not today.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
All right. You're so mean.
So let's do a nice wide base. All right. What you want to do is nice wide base. Take a deep breath. All right. Put the hands out. And since we're going to work some chest exercises today, we're going to open and close the chest. All right. What you're doing here is not trying to overexert the muscle, just warm it and prepare it for exercise. Opening the chest up.
Okay.
And then stretching out the scapular area, the back, all right? 3, 2, and 1, okay? Let's do some butt kicks, okay? Just
all
to
right.
get the body, the blood flowing a little bit. 3, 2, and 1, go. You just wanna be light on your feet. If you can't handle the impact, okay, just here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm gonna keep on going.
All right.
You can do this for about 30 seconds. After about 10, 15 seconds, actually, you start to feel the body warm up.
Mm.
Okay, I'm gonna go 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. Okay.
All right.
So we got these nice cushiony chairs.
Yeah.
We're not gonna sit in them. Okay.
Oh.
But we're gonna pretend.
Okay.
But we're gonna work the triceps, okay?
All right.
We're gonna keep the legs about shoulder width apart, parallel, and toes pointing forward.
All right.
The back of your,
sit-upon?
Pants, yes. You call it sit-upon?
Yes, sit-upon.
We're gonna go all the way down, let it graze against the chair, and back up, okay? When you get to the top, squeeze your tricep, all right? Let's go for 6, 3, 2, and 1, go. 1. Now, don't do these too fast. 3, 4, 5, I want you to hold it on 6. And squeeze here, okay? The back of the arm is working the entire time, okay?
Mm-hmm.
One more time. All the way down, stretch, 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 and back up, okay? This is working the back of the triceps. Some people call it the hello goodbyes. You know when you're waving. And
yes.
How do I get rid of these?
That's why the queen does it this way.
Yes.
Didn't you know?
Yeah. All right, so we're going to turn around. Excuse
right.
my back, right? But we're going to go here.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to still work the core. But we're going to work the chest a little bit. We're going to put the right leg up for 2 reps and then the left leg up for 2 reps.
All right.
Okay? 3, 2, put the right leg up. And 1, go. 1, 2, switch. Go. 1, 2, switch. Go. 1, 2, last set, switch. Go. 1, and 2. Okay, we're picking up that leg so that we can involve a little bit, some glutes, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And a good way to maximize one exercise and add another one into it. Compound
also makes
exercise.
You work your core, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Because you're not symmetrical.
There
yeah.
you go. Okay?
Yeah.
So what we're gonna do next is some in and out, some core workout.
All right.
Exercise, sorry. We're gonna sit on the edge of the chair, okay? You could use a bench, but we got a nice cushiony chair.
We have.
Yeah. So, legs are gonna be up here. You're gonna sit back a bit, extend it all the way out, and then in, okay? Okay, all the way out. Okay, so in this position here, your legs are working.
Mm-hmm.
Back in, squeeze, try and bring your leg all the way in towards your chest, back out. Let's do 3, go. 1, 2. And 3, okay? Great exercise to challenge the core, okay?
I love doing that when I'm watching TV.
Really?
Yeah. Not the whole time.
You need to watch some more interesting TV.
Do I?
Yeah. If you can exercise and do that, you need to change the station.
Well, it's not Hope Channel then.
You know, when I'm watching TV, I'm not thinking about any exercise.
Don't you? Oh,
you
that's because you do it all day.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah.
I'm like, I just want to sit and veg out a little bit.
All right.
All right, let's stretch it out. Okay. Now, cool down is what? We want to relax.
Yep.
Right? So I like here, stretching it out here.
Yeah, because we used those muscles.
We did. Triceps are nice and engaged. But what I do want you to do, pay attention to this, is don't make this shoulder go all the way up. Relax it down, okay? You don't want it to be up here. Mm. You want to just relax, okay? Let's switch sides. Now, what you could do is take this hand here, these fingers, and reach across the body. You will feel your triceps engage a little bit.
Mm.
Just flex a little bit. Feel it. Admire your hard work.
There you go. Good muscle.
You can pet your tricep. There you go. Pet your tricep, you know? Good tricep.
Sounds like you're petting your dinosaur, your tricep. Yeah.
Shake it out. Now, we started with this, right? And you could finish with this. Okay. Open and close. Feel good?
Very good. Yeah.
Now, you can repeat this for a couple times, three times. You know, you either do it for time or you do it for reps.
Great. Well, thanks, Sean. That was a great workout.
Very welcome.
And now let's watch an ageless advantage. And while you sit there, do your scrunches.
Have you ever wondered if vegetarians get enough protein? If protection from wrist fractures is the measure, then plant proteins seem to be a good choice. Wondering where to find plant-based protein? Nuts are an excellent source, as are beans and legumes. Soy products like tofu and tempeh are protein dense. And the Adventist Health Study found that increasing plant-based protein foods reduced the risk of wrist fracture in women by nearly 70%. Enjoying plant-based protein foods is another ageless advantage.
Now it's your turn to ask me some questions. Somebody called and asked, I'd like to know what the parathyroid gland does. Well, the parathyroid gland is actually four little glands that sit against the thyroid gland here in your throat. And they have nothing to do with the function of the thyroid. Their job is to control and fine-tune calcium levels in the blood. Too much or too little calcium can have a serious impact on our muscles, our heart, the formation of stones in the kidneys, the gastrointestinal tract, and of course our bones. So they're really important but tiny structures. Avril sent an email and asked, what are probiotics and prebiotics? Great question, Avril. The intestines have bacteria living in them. Some of those bacteria are helpful, and they're important to maintain good health, not just digestive health, but even immune health. And then probiotics are those good germs. There are also bad germs that we call pathogens that are not particularly helpful. But there's always a balance between the two. So we want plenty of probiotics. And you can buy them in bottles in your health food store. You want to keep them in the fridge because they do age and die off. So hopefully your health food store has them stored in the fridge as well. And you'll also find probiotics in a number of cultured foods, like yogurt. Prebiotics, on the other hand, are the fibre-type components in foods that these good germs like to live on. So it can be helpful to eat foods that contain prebiotics when you're taking probiotics. Common foods that have a good prebiotics are raw garlic, raw or cooked onion, whole wheat flour, asparagus, tomatoes, bananas, and even the stems of mushrooms. Now, there are also more exotic foods that are rich in prebiotics, like raw Jerusalem artichokes, raw dandelion greens, but I guess that's not too exotic because you can get them from the front lawn and put them in your salad, and then raw chicory root is another source. Someone else called and said, I have hypothyroidism, but my T3 and T4 are always normal. Why is this? Well, it may be that they're normal because you're on medication. I can't really tell from your question. But there is another test that reflects your thyroid gland's function, and that's a TSH, or thyroid stimulating hormone. And that will tell your doctor a little bit more about your thyroid function. And another thing that they may be checking are thyroid antibodies, or the antibodies that your body can make against your thyroid gland. So I'm sure your doctor's monitoring all of the things that need to be monitored and is treating you accordingly, and that's why your T3 and T4 are normal. From your side, just be sure you're getting the right amount of iodine, not too much and not too little.
Thanks for calling in your questions. Remember the numbers 855 400 Healthy. That's 855 400 4325. We're also happy to pick up your questions off of our Facebook page. You can text to 301 960 5144. And if you're overseas, you can call or text that number 301 960 5144. Bananas are the world's largest herb, and they're grown mainly in the tropical areas. Where sweet yellow bananas such as these are grown and they can be eaten raw, or there are plantain bananas which are high in starch and they require cooking. Fruit bananas such as these turn yellow as they ripen, and you want to look for the little black spots so that you know that the starch is turning into sugar. Remember though, one medium banana is one serving and it contains over 100 calories. It's very easy to eat too many bananas, especially if you have diabetes. They contain, though, 400 milligrams of potassium and 3 grams of fiber, along with some magnesium. Add a banana to your breakfast cereal or try cooking some plantain bananas. Get more potassium into your diet for good cardiovascular health. Bon appetit. Now we'll hear from Dr. Taylor on what's vital for the brain. Dr. Taylor, you were just mentioning how toxic sugar is to the brain. Tell us about that.
Well, there are some substances that are called neurotoxins that are really unfortunate when you ingest it for brain function. Refined sugar is one of them. Some of these sweeteners like aspartame are also considered a neurotoxin. And the brain can get addicted, actually, to simple sugars, just like it can get addicted to almost anything else. And then people crave it, and they keep eating it and eating it, and it gums up my brain. I'll tell you that I can tell the difference. If I were to eat one chocolate chip cookie, which I grew up loving, before I made a presentation or did an interview, I could tell in terms of brain function. I just don't think that quickly.
Wow. Now, I'm thinking neurotoxin. Tell us what a neurotoxin is.
Well, it can increase the glycemic index in the brain. It can give it a shot of glucose. And the brain really likes to keep this even level of glucose. And when you keep getting shots of it, it can increase inflammation and can be very detrimental to the brain. And maybe in some people lead toward things like diabetes.
Will it make the brain irritable or give us problems sleeping?
Oh, it can. It can. And especially if, let's say, you're addicted to sugar, meaning you like that high that you get, and you don't get your amount of sugar for today, absolutely you can get irritable. The brain is, that's the one way it gets your attention. You know, I want what I want and I want it now, and you usually give me 6 sugary donuts at 10 o'clock and I haven't had any, so what's the problem here, folks?
And so
it can push you toward that behavior.
Which brings me to the problem of obesity, and especially childhood obesity, when our brain is so plastic and so sensitive and vulnerable. Any data on childhood obesity, what might be causing that?
Childhood obesity often leads to obese adults.
Absolutely.
And it's not good for the brain, male or female, to be obese. But there is some research that suggests it's even worse on the female brain. And a female who's been obese her whole life has a significantly increased risk of developing dementia, even more so than the male brain. So then it goes back to, how did your family eat? How did your family drink? You know, what were the health practices in your family? There's some fascinating research that was done in Europe, taking a several day window in the lives of preschool children and school age children, just about what they drank for beverages. And it was totally scary, in my brain's opinion. Something like 71% of the preschoolers drank no water during the study period, and 50% of the school-age children drank no water. What were they drinking? Yeah. They were drinking fruit juice, colored, flavored, sugary drinks, colas, 7-Ups, and so on. And the problem with that is, They're calories. There's no calories in pure water.
No.
So if you drink 12 ounces of orange juice, you're looking at nearly 300 calories. Mm-hmm. And you do this every single day, all week long, there's a couple thousand calories. And it's so easy then to gain weight, which is not good for the brain. Because as you gain weight, you tend to reduce your exercise. And the brain is really dependent on physical exercise to keep the blood flowing through it and bringing micronutrition and oxygen and taking away waste products and so on.
Right. Now, so that's happening in childhood. When does the brain finish development?
Never.
Never?
But if you are looking at what we call, you know, the myelination of the pathways and so on, you know, about age 3, 4, 5, all of the brain is beginning to develop, but you're concentrating functions in the lower parts of the brain. And then, you know, 6, 7, 8, the frontal lobes begin to develop. And then teenage, the prefrontal lobes are starting to develop, but they're probably not done until late 20s. And you need those functions to make good decisions.
But we make a lot of important decisions that set us up for life.
Before the brain is done.
Long before the late 20s.
And they create a lot of problems for many people from which they can never recover.
Does it affect brain development?
It can. If you are abused, for example, your brain is believed to stop developing emotionally at the age you were when you experienced the abuse. So now you may be 60 and your prefrontal cortex is done, but you're operating on the emotions of a 7-year-old. It's unattractive and unhelpful.
And that sets you up for a lot of problems in life, doesn't it? If from a maturity perspective, an emotional maturity perspective, you're behind. We're going to come back to that.
Being emotionally stunted is a serious problem, and one that we're seeing more and more. Dr. Taylor has more to tell us about this problem right after the break. Don't go away.
Whatever you do, do it all in the name of the Lord.
I love learning about my ancestors. It makes me feel like I have a place in history. And I always tell my family, the more you learn about your past, the more you understand the present. But the past doesn't have all the answers, especially about the future. There's so much uncertainty and so much fear in the world today, which is why I'm so happy that I found something that brings together my past, my present, and my future. I know that no matter what happens, there is a plan. And this gives me hope.
And we're back. Remember to call us with your health question at 855-400-HEALTHY. Let's hear more of Dr. Ben Carson's story of how he harnessed and trained his brain. It was his secret to becoming the world's most famous neurosurgeon.
I would get on the bus and I would go downtown to the Detroit Institute of Arts and roam through those galleries until I knew every painter who painted each picture and when they were born and when they died and what period it represented. And I was always listening to my portable radio, listening to classical music. And, you know, I'd be walking down the streets of Detroit listening to classical music, and people thought I was nuts. This guy's crazy. But years later, when I decided that I wanted to be a neurosurgeon, well, I wanted to go to the place that's best known for neurosurgery, and that would be Johns Hopkins. But as I said before, they only took 2 people a year out of 125 applicants. But When I got an interview and I went there, the fellow who was in charge of the neurosurgery residency program, George B. Uvdrahi, was also in charge of cultural affairs at the hospital. And somehow the conversation turned to classical music. And we talked for over an hour about different composers and their styles, conductors, orchestras, orchestral halls. There was no way he wasn't taking me in the program, because he had to have somebody to discuss these things with. But what I emphasize to young people all the time is there's no such thing as useless knowledge, because you never know what doors it's going to open for you. And the more you know, the more options you have. We cannot trace, you know, the origins of a thought. We cannot define where imagination comes from. And I'm not sure we ever will, because that exists in a different dimension. The brain is the conduit through which we reach that other dimension, but we have no way of quantifying and measuring it. But we do have the ability to enjoy it and to use it to the fullest extent.
That's how imagination and dreams become the stuff of reality. Now Dr. Taylor tells us how to help our kids develop their prefrontal cortex to its fullest extent.
Dr. Taylor, we were just talking about how someone can have a very traumatic event and become stuck emotionally in that age. How do they free themselves up?
Abuse recovery is a huge topic and a huge area of investigation now. The person needs to be helped to recover. It's hard to do that on your own because we're relational. And so they need to recover physically, sexually, however that, whatever the damage was. But then they need to recover in terms of brain function, in learning how to look at that with different eyes. Because when people are abused, they often go straight into a victim stance. And we want them to recover and move to a survivor position. And, you know, that's a process.
Now, is there anything else that's age-dependent in terms of brain development?
Everything is age-dependent.
Tell us about decision-making, because we were saying that, you know, your brain is not finished myelinating until your late 20s, yet you've made a lot of decisions. You've often chosen a career, you've chosen a mate, and done some really...
And that's unfortunate. You know, we need to slow down, and our culture is in wanting people to go faster. I mean, we have little kids now doing Miss America contests, so to speak, which is just the work of children is play. It is not pretending to be a grown-up. But you only have two hemispheres.
Yes.
And part of being successful in life is learning how to use willpower, learning how to make decisions, learning how to delay gratification. So parents and teachers need to help children learn to do that early on, even though the complete development of the prefrontal cortex probably, which is what differentiates us from most other mammals, probably is not going to be done till late 20s. But if you've not been practicing, you have no skills developed. So parents need to give children choices, but only two at a time. And they need to be choices, either one that the parents is comfortable with, but that they don't care. You know, do you want to wear the blue shirt or the red shirt? You know, do you want to wear your, you know, patent shoes, or do you want to wear your boots? Doesn't matter, but have them make a choice, and then they need to experience the consequences of those choices.
In what way?
Well, let's say mother says, do you want to go to the zoo today, or do you want to go to the park? And the kid says, I want to go to the park. So they go to the park, and after they've been at the park for 30 minutes, they say, okay, I don't want to go to the park. I want to go to the zoo. The consequence of that choice is that you are at the park today. And the answer is, next time you can choose to go to the zoo. Today you chose to go to the park. Let's have fun at the park. And they can sit there and pout if they want, but you do not jump in the car and go to the zoo, because they need to take those consequences. But only two choices at a time, because the brain will drop off. If you give them three or four or five, it'll drop off the one you might want. So you need to just go with the two Lots of choices, hang on to the consequences.
How important is it to train self-control and management of willpower in little people?
I think we misunderstand, first of all, what willpower is. It is a prefrontal cortex function that will enable us to accomplish a goal, to do something in a new way, to do something we've never ever done before. People try to use willpower to stop behavior for which they get a reward. That's not what it was designed to do. So if you wanted to stop drinking pop and start drinking water, you would not say to your brain, I don't want to drink pop. You'd forget about pop. You would say, I choose to drink water. That puts the picture of water in the prefrontal cortex, and willpower will help you move toward that.
And how do you teach children that sense of doing the thing that's the most sensible, the right thing to do?
Well, it depends on how you phrase it. Mm-hmm. You always phrase it positively. Avoid ever saying what you don't want them to do. Always tell them what you do want them to do. Mm-hmm. Remember your homework. Wear your coat. Don't forget your homework is unhelpful.
Right.
Because the picture is forgetting.
Right. So put it in a positive framework and your children are going to respond to that. Thank you so much. It's been wonderful having you on the show today.
My pleasure.
Every brain is gifted, including yours. Think about what task your brain seems to find easy. Fine-tune that skill and use it to best effect. It may not be neurosurgery, but it will still be valuable and important. If you'd just been given the most powerful computer in the world, you'd look after it, wouldn't you? Well, your brain is just that, the most powerful computer in the world. So plan how to make it last a lifetime. And strengthen your prefrontal cortex with good habits, far-reaching goals, abstract thinking, and meditation. And then through prayer, connect your mind with the mind of the infinite God. This concludes our special four-part series on brain function. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. I'll see you next time.